Half of the oral history program of the Washington County Museum and Century High School. The interviewee is Bob VanderZanden and Tim Delsman. The interviewers are Kathy Bowie and Mike Smith. The interview took place at Godfather's Pizza on Baseline on Thursday, May 30th, 2001.
I can't even say her name now. Who's your teacher?
Miss Dykin.
Yeah, Christy. She was union president when I was chairman of the board of the old school district. And so that's how we got to know each other. We worked together quite a little bit. And so I think that's why she called. She just said that you guys were doing a report on kind of what Hillsborough was like during the Vietnam War. That's kind of the essence of what she told me.
Yeah, what we're trying to do is get an idea of what Hillsborough was like during the Vietnam War, just like in Hillsborough itself, not like all of Oregon. And we're trying to get interviewees and reading the Argus and stuff and compiling a report with another class.
At Century.
Yeah.
I thought she's teaching only at Century now? She doesn't teach.
As far as I know.
Okay. She was at Hill High when, see, I was on the board still when they built Century, but I knew she transferred, but I thought she split her time between the two schools, so she's at Century full-time.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Okay.
And we just got some general questions.
What was your life like before the war started?
Well, let's kind of thin it out just a little. We both graduated from high school in 1965, and I went down to Oregon State in fall of 65, and Tim went to Portland Community, right?
For the first year.
Yeah. Then he transferred to Oregon State. And then because I was given to too much beer drinking, I did not finish school at Oregon State without a sojourn of adventure, you know. In other words, I flunked out and then I went
back. They made me his little brother. I had a fraternity house. I tried to keep up with my big brother. And so kind of the same thing happened, although I ended up going into service. He was smart enough to get back into school.
So
we were at an age that things were pretty carefree.
Yeah. In 67, I went to Portland Community and Tim finished up in Oregon State. And then I went back to Oregon State and Tim went into the service right after that. And I think you went in 67, wasn't it?
Yeah, I enlisted in 67, started in 68.
Yeah.
And you said carefree. I mean, is that like generally?
We were younger and weren't concerned about things like we became after we grew up a little bit.
We were both very conservative people too. I mean, we were not part of the, we were not part of the war movement or anything, you know, the anti-war movement.
Were there movements in Hillsborough?
I never saw any parades or anything, but
at Oregon State there was, and that was the closest thing that I kind of saw. Like on Wednesdays they'd have a demonstration, and I was in ROTC, you know what that is, in Zurgos. And so I'd wear my uniform and I'd march right down through the middle of them on purpose.
Looking for trouble.
But the people carrying signs were against the war, and they were like outnumbered 5-1 by the ones supporting the war. And that was in 66, 67.
You would have found it entirely different had you gone to University of Oregon, though, where there was much more liberal campus, much more in tune with protests and all the rest of it.
And I don't remember a single protest in Hillsborough.
No, Hillsborough's probably more, at that time, was probably more conservative in nature than even Oregon State University.
Did you hear, like, conversations just, like, around town, just, like, not, like, big protests, but just people's ideas of the war?
It was mostly talking about people that were in, like, so-and-so is in the service or going to go in the service or is over in Vietnam or something like
that. Nothing about the motives for the war?
No, and it would be more in support of, like, oh, your son's over there or your brother's over there or something like that. It wasn't as even necessarily pro or anti-war. It was more of worrying about the relationship between whoever it was that was over there.
You mean a personal relationship with people? I would say generally that, at least in the frame of reference that I am familiar with, everyone was very much in support of the war. And I guess not about the war itself, but in support of the government. Not
of the people in the service, even.
Right.
I don't think it was necessarily not a support of the government. I think it was, because now it's almost like you either support it or you don't. Back then it was like you were supporting the government, but you were supporting the people that were over there.
Right. You just didn't, you didn't want to be, you know, our families, you know, my parents, my uncles and aunts and stuff like that are World War II people. And World War II people, you know, you supported your government, and that's where that ended right there. You supported their efforts and your country. It was a very patriotic time, World War II was. My father-in-law, he served in World War II in the European theater and was a bombardier on B-17s. And he is an arch patriot. I mean, he is a big supporter of what the government did. My father, he was not part of the military, but his two younger brothers served in World War II. So that group of people are extremely patriotic, or had been extremely patriotic. My father-in-law is still alive. My dad is deceased, and my uncles are deceased. And they supported the government, and they supported what the government wanted supported. That was just the way they were. And so if you take that kind of background and throw me in there, well, my first thoughts are going to be, well, I support the government. I support our military. I support the people that I know who are in that military. It's very natural. And even when I went to college and started talking to people down there from different backgrounds, my first reaction was, well, what, you know, I have to support, I am patriotic, and I will support our government. I will support what we're doing. And
I think the people our age, and by our age I mean like just a couple of years behind us is not our age.
Yeah.
The people our age were not the rebellious ones that made the news. It seemed like we you know, honor your father and your mother type thing. I mean, it was like the way your parents went influenced you a lot, and you went that way. We're just like 2 years behind us. It was a radical change for some reason. And those people almost would do things the opposite of the way their parents, or the opposite of the way the adults did. So I think the adults influenced us and people our age and maybe a year behind us. I don't know what happened, but just 2 years behind us, it was,
a lot
of those people got in.
Well, drug culture, I mean, when, like Tim says, a couple classes behind us at fraternity parties, they didn't drink beer, they all smoked dope or something. But not when I was around. Nobody touched this stuff.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was just a huge demarcation. The class of 67, 69, things like that, were so much different than our class. I mean, we were kind of the last of
the... What about the older classes?
More so, I think, than us. Or yeah. At least more, we were, I think, would relate more to the older classes by far than those behind us.
We had a friend who served in Vietnam, Pete Zerker. He was three or four years ahead of us.
Yeah.
And he served in, was like 65, so the year that we were a senior in high school, he was in Vietnam. And he was the, I would say, an ultra-patriot. I mean, he was there because that was what he was supposed to do.
And I think he was there about the same time.
Yeah, Dale Harrington.
And he was same age, same times, and both of them in the Marines. And it was just...
Gung-ho to the ground. Yeah. And then you went over in 69, January 69. Crystal and I got married in 68, and...
I was able to make it to the wedding. You can't be in the wedding party.
At all the parties, yeah. But, so, then Tim got to go over then, and I think there was a huge difference between those people that fought in Vietnam in 65, 66, and those that got over
yes.
there in 69.
Because 68 is when the Tet Offensive was, and I think 68 might have been the year that they had the largest number of casualties. 68 and 69, by far, were the most... They had more casualties those 2 years than they did the other years before and after. But also it was like stuff at home was happening then. I don't know, Woodstock I think was in 68 or something like that. And it was just like, that was almost a, I don't know if apex is the right word, but I mean it was like it built to something like that. And I don't know if there was anything like that since then. But that was the people that would enjoy going to something like that. The people that went to something like that were different than the people that I associated with. And Hillsborough, the way I remember it, was not at all like that kind of movement.
And it was about then that you could start to feel a difference around the area. In the 60s, in mid to late 60s, it was pretty much, you know, like we talked about, you know, people, most of the people that we knew supported the war. Nobody wanted to go over there and fight unless you could find some, you know, nobody wanted to go to war, but you did what you had to do. That's what it boiled down to.
Okay.
And then, but in 69, 70, somewhere in that frame is when all of a sudden the discussion started changing to where people were saying, just as soon they came home, I just want this over. This is going on too long. There's no way to win. There's no definition of win. There's, and so I think, you know, we talked a little bit on hunting trips and one thing or another, that when you came home, it was not a very, you know, it was nice to be home, but the feeling wasn't the same.
Yes, and when I
not like
home,
when Peter or...
I took my uniform, well, I ended up spending a bunch of time before I got home, so I never even wore my uniform after I got home. Where before that, I mean, guys would, of course I was out of the service. When I was in the service, I wore my uniform when I was home. But I wasn't home all that much. And it was like, Hillsboro, I think it didn't become necessarily a place where I never ever experienced anybody spitting on me or being called a baby killer. And I know of guys that did experience that, but not in Hillsboro.
And, but even then...
What changed was that it was like, it wasn't against it, but there wasn't the talk for it. So it wasn't like Hillsboro became anti-rape.
Can we at least share with us, okay? I mean...
Yeah.
Are you sure? Absolutely. Could we at least order you something to drink? Or really, we'd be honored to have.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then we're gonna pig out. You guys just have to sit on. No, get away. You can't have
mine.
He's got to put his glasses on to
mine.
See what he's eating. He's really getting old.
What would you guys say about like the draft? Did the draft affect Hillsboro much, or were people more voluntary? Did you ever hear of people like avoiding going to war if they were called or something?
Not in the group of people that we were in.
Yeah.
You know, let's be perfectly honest, nobody wanted to go. I don't know of anybody other after Pete Zerker and maybe a couple others in the early
war. I did enlist.
You always slow to learn. When I flunked out, they took my, spring of 67 was when Oregon State said they didn't want me to go to school there anymore. So I thought, well, you know, I mean, it's nickel dime. I mean, it's, you know, 10 days later, I'd be getting my draft notice. That's the way it was then. And so I thought, well, I'm going to go down and enlist. I'll beat them to the punch. You know, I'd rather at least get a chance to select something rather than be an absolute ground pounder. So I went down to enlist and started going through the paperwork. And one of the things you could get out for was if you had asthma. And I'd been having asthma since I was 4 years old. And I still am plagued with it. But so I called my doctor here at home. And he says, I'll write you a letter instantly. And so 2 days later, I had a 4F draft deferment. Never had to worry. And that's a medical deferment for lack of physical attributes. But and that's not uncommon. People would find, you know, they would take every legal means of the group that we knew. They would take every legal means to stay out of the draft, or, you know, I mean, stay away from the draft. But a lot of them joined, a lot of guys joined the reserves.
Yeah, the reserves of the National Guard, that's probably 80 or 90% of the guys we knew that ended up in service from some kind of reserve unit or something like that.
But
and,
I cannot.
But not, and there were reservists going over there, and National Guards people going over there. Not, do you guys remember Desert Storm? Were you old enough to?
I saw a movie.
Because there was a lot of reservists went in that. But that wasn't the way it was done in Vietnam. It wasn't that many reservists went over there. But there were some that did. So it wasn't like you were getting out of going. But a lot of people did go that way. But as far as like leaving the country or... I don't know of a single person that burned a draft card. You know what that means to burn your draft card? You guys are both 18?
I'm 17.
Oh, okay. Well, don't you still have to sign up for the draft when you get to be 18? If you were to not have that card when you were asked to show
you
it,
won't
you
have people.
Well, don't they have gals do it now?
I don't think so.
Yeah, maybe. Anyway, you needed to keep that card and almost protect that card. And it became a very anti-war thing to burn your draft card. And people would do it in public and stuff. And it was...
What would happen if...
Well, they'd put you in jail. I don't know exactly what, but I know that you'd end up at least going to jail for not having it. And if they could prove you burned it, probably more longer. I just don't remember what the penalty was.
They moved you to the front of the line. A lot of cases.
What was it like during the war? Like when, during the fighting in the war?
Can't help.
You haven't asked yet.
Over there? There was an awful lot of people went that ended up coming back home. But it seemed like there was an awful lot of people that didn't. And it was, I don't know how to explain that. I was trained in the infantry, but when I got over there, they put me in the combat engineers. And we would do things like build defensive positions, like going to clear trees where there were, so you could bring in large guns like howitzers and cannons, or make landing zones for helicopters, or we would clear minefields and stuff like that. And so the actual fighting that took place out in the jungle, I was not involved in. It was some that I was involved in when the fighting would come into the areas where I was, which was more of a defensive type fighting as opposed to going out on the offensive.
What about at home during the war? I mean, like, before the war, you know, people probably had an opinion about, you know, should we go to war or not. Then during the war, and then after the war, would you say that anything changed in Hillsborough?
Yeah, as there was a progression. Like I say, early in the war, people were supporters of their government, and they cared strongly about the people who went over there to fight. And I think that was a fairly universal feeling in the areas that we were, you know, this is kind of a conservative rural town. You know, back in the 50s and 60s, it was very much an agricultural town. And then as it, you know, became, you know, places like Tektronix opened up, it kind of became more and more urban, you know, and had more manufacturing kind of jobs. And now with Intel and all the rest of them, it's very, very much that way. And you know, people of the land, farmers and cattlemen, that kind of thing, are very conservative kind of people. But as time went on,
and it was 10 years. See, this thing went from 65 to 75, 73, whatever it was.
Yeah. And I think it was somewhere in that 68, 69 range is when things really kind of were in a state of flux. You know, the big, you know, Kent State kind of things and Berkeley kind of things, and society itself was changing an awful lot. And I think the society change really sponsored the war change more than anything, because you know, the drug culture and the free love kind of things and all those kind of things, the hippie movement, you know, the Haight-Ashbury kind of stuff. Gee, when I was a kid, I used to listen to Hank Williams kind of music, and then as you know, when I got to high school age, it was the Beatles, and then it was, you know, I can't even think of some of the stuff in the late 60s. I mean, it was very much a drug kind of culture, you know, the hippie kind of thing and all that. And that really ushered in there was a huge division between parents and older people and this young group of people, you know, that were kind of saying, oh, that all bogus, you know, let's move on.
And if the older people wanted to do it, they'd just try to do something almost 180 degrees.
So by the time you got into and the war wasn't going well either. I mean, there was no sense of victory. There was no, it was just a holding action. It was it wasn't anything like World War II, where you were really trying to defeat an enemy that was out to take over your country. It wasn't that kind of thing. It wasn't a threat here at home. So as time moved on, you could see the futility. There was no sense of how they could win this war. And so even the rock solid people started, you know, the ones who are ultra conservative, they started going, wait a minute, where is this going to go? They just keep sending back our boys in boxes. Where is this going to go? And I think it was when close to 1970, when Nixon first ran for president, he promised that he would get us out of Vietnam, and that was one of the key things that got him elected. People were going, look, we'll support you guys, but you got to bring it to an end. You just can't keep going this way. And so from 70 to 74, it was in a constant kind of despooling the war, and everybody's going, well, it's just good, it's finally over, that kind of thing. And that's kind of the sense of what I had. you know, again, places like Eugene and San Francisco. I don't even know of a large peace rally in Portland. Do you? There was?
I think so.
Much better memory, too.
I can't really remember specifically, but I think it was that way a little bit, but very low key compared to the ones that made the news, mm-hmm. like Frisco.
Would you say there were any, like, organizations, like Hillsborough, that, like, got together and sent things to their sons in Vietnam?
Oh, definitely. There was, I don't know who they are from Hillsborough, but I know the unit that I was with, which is 101st, they got lots and lots of packages, and there'd be, you know, like, notes in there from children, notes in there from mostly, I'd say, like, kind of like veterans organizations, like VFW. But I mean, it would be like ladies organizations. I don't know if they were like flowers or knitting or what they were doing, but it was like a ladies group would get together and they put boxes in. And then I personally, like say for my grandmother, my aunt, and my mom and my sis and stuff, I was constantly getting boxes and stuff. And a lot of the other guys were also from their family. But a lot of stuff we'd get, it was two GIs from, they had no idea who they were sending them to, and they would be things like, you know, baby powder or oil, like WD-40 to oil your weapons with and stuff like that. Just things you might need. Packages of salt and pepper, packages of Swiss, you know, chocolate, hot chocolate mix and stuff like that.
Did people continue sending the stuff, like, during the war?
See, I got there in 69, and it was still happening when I was there. Now, what happened after that, I don't know. And that was at a point, sort of, I don't know if that was a low ebb, but that was certainly the center of that change, which was about halfway through, I guess.
Mm-hmm. We knew a lot of guys who went to the war in the early part of the war. I don't really know very many guys, and that's kind of funny, you know, because it's only 5 years difference in age, but I didn't know very many guys that went over in the later part of the war.
I don't either.
So, but I knew a bunch of guys that went in even before I was of college age. And then Gene Gayden was over fairly early, wasn't he? I think he's a friend of ours from North Plains, or we both knew. He died over
there.
He was
a pilot, a Navy pilot. He went down and they never recovered him. And that was in 67 that happened, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Spring of 67.
So what else?
Any interesting stories?
Yeah, I've got one that meant a lot to me. Bob and I have known each other since the first grade, and there was another family that we did a lot with horses when we were in high school. And the oldest son enlisted he finished college. He was a year behind us, and he finished college in 60 and 70. He must still be in college. And when I came home, in January of 70. Anyway, Gary was going in the Marines with the college, being a college graduate, then he could go in and go through OCS and become an officer, which is what he did. So when I got home in January of 70, they had a great big party, and it was at the house Bob was living in that time, had a basement. And we had that basement. Oh, it wasn't a very big basement, but it couldn't have been much more crowded with people. And there were people from little bitty kids all the way up to, I don't know, really old people.
Yeah,
like
they
40s, 50s.
No, actually, my folks were there.
There was grandparent ages.
Yeah.
They weren't maybe as much older than what we are now, I guess.
Yeah, well,
seemed like really old people then, though. But, I mean, it was just all kinds of generations. Some people drinking and some people not drinking.
Some already falling
great big
down
sign,
drunk, you know.
Welcome
a big
Tim,
deal.
Goodbye, Gary. And so it was, we had a lot of the same friends. And so most everybody there knew both of us, but I'm sure there were a few that only knew one or the other. But I mean, I can't even remember. There was lots and lots, I don't know, 50 to 100 people there anyway, and you couldn't even hardly fit that many in that whole house. Well, I guess upstairs.
Well, they were everywhere.
I mean, yeah, upstairs, downstairs. It was really a warm thing, and everybody, I mean, it was just like, that's the kind of stuff that I remember. experience in when I was in the service and at home, which I wasn't home that much during those 3 years I was in the service. I only got home like maybe 3 or 4 times for a few. That time I was home for 30 days. And actually when Bob got married, which was just before I went, was 30 days. So I had those 2 30-day leaves. And I don't remember any kind of negative military feelings going on with the people that I associated with. But again, they were more of a conservative slant, and you know, it just kind of Hillsborough was very rural back in
those years. There's only like 7,000 people living in the town, so it was real. You know, you knew almost everybody in the town. It was a whole lot different than it is now. So that was the first party our oldest son went to. He was 2 months old then.
Right.
He's 30. He's almost 32 now. Gosh. Yeah, Grandpa Bob. We have 4 grandchildren, so we're very fortunate.
Anything else? Anything else?
I'm just trying to think of some other stories and stuff.
We have Crystal's sisters. Her two older, Crystal's my wife, and she had 2 older sisters that both attended the University of Oregon. And one of them in particular was very much opposed to the war. But that is about the only people that we dealt with on. But even then, their view of the war, and even though it was quite a little different than ours, we both got along.
You're talking about Cheryl?
Yeah.
And her husband was in the service. Right?
Yeah, his last year of college, they're a couple years younger than, he's a year younger than I am, and he joined.
He's not quite a year younger than me,
though. I'm, what, 3 months older than Tim? And he continues. Continues to mention it. Larry, he was extremely opposed to the war. Cheryl, you know, they were dating at the time. They were really opposed to the war. But when he got close to graduation, he joined the military to avoid going to Vietnam. He joined a reserve unit, so a National Guard unit out of Eugene, so that he could didn't have to worry about going to Vietnam. But I mean, they came and lived with us when he was on active duty. Cheryl would come stay with us, and then on weekends that he came up, and then they lived with us when he was on active duty on weekends and stuff like that. And even though our views were entirely different, it wasn't a big issue. I mean, it wasn't like we were, you know, after each other or anything. So you see a lot of things on television in those days where, you know, there was a kind of a real adversarial relationship between people, but we didn't see that around here. People still kind of got along.
Split families.
Yeah.
It just caused so many problems. There was a lot of, maybe even hard feelings that lasted forever until one of them died or something.
Yeah.
And just that kind of stuff I did only on television.
Yeah, I was, there was a strong connection between, at least from my view, of the anti-war movement and the peace and love generation and the drug culture. All were kind of connected, and then there was just us good old straight guys on the other side, you know. I don't mean to make it sound so simplistic, but there was a lot of that. That was kind of the mold, if you would. It's probably not a great deal different than what you guys find in your school now. You find that those people over there, and then there's us guys, you know. At least our kids tell me that was what happened still in schools. You know. But I'll know that I would be the first to admit that a lot of guys were very serious about keeping their 2S deferment, that they wanted no part of going to war, no matter how they viewed that war. So it was,
but
only
that was more toward, like Bob was saying a little while ago, toward the end of the 60s and in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anybody, at least not in the same way, trying to stay out of going up until about, I don't know, maybe 67 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But at that point it was still pretty much in the earlier stages. And there wasn't near as many Americans over there as there was later on. 69 and, or 68 and 70, I believe, were also the year most, there was the biggest number of Americans over there.
There's just a huge change in society from 62 to 69, where in 62 everybody still had the old World War II, Korean War syndrome, you know, you have to serve in the military, you have to do your duty. It's an honor to be in the military and be involved in battles and whatever. And by 69 and 70, you couldn't find anybody who felt that way. So, or maybe you could, I couldn't.
You guys were in.
Obviously.
All right, well, I think that's plenty to write on.
You guys didn't have to ask very many questions, did you?
Yeah.
That's why I brought Tim along. He's a real talker.
That's what Miss Dyking said. She said, just ask one question and go on.
Well, I hope that we're able to portray an accurate description of what it was like. Hillsboro was a much simpler town, and it's just different. Are either one of you from here originally, or your families?
I'm from Boston.
I see.
I'm from Portland.
Yeah. Well, Hillsboro was a very, very much a real small town up until the mid-80s it started to grow up. My family's been here for four generations. Tim's maybe longer than that.
And, six.
we remember Hillsboro as being the Spartans, you know, a long ways out there, you know.
Yeah, there was only one high school. And all 4 years went in the same building.
That's J.B. Thomas, you know, J.B. Thomas Junior High is?
Yeah.
He was my ag instructor.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know anybody old enough that their buildings are named after
him. Yeah, you're so much older than me.
It's nice to forget. Yeah, it was just a whole lot different then.
And by carefree, I did mean that more because of our age when I made that comment earlier. But a little bit, it's just society even. I mean, it was just, people didn't have the deep thoughts about, well, I guess it was the war, that's what we're talking about here, that seemed to, there were other things other than the war that seemed to divide people. I think Bob hit it pretty close with a different culture going on. But it was like, there just wasn't, it was a more carefree time in our country's history than it became after that. It became very, it seemed like complicated. But then we got older and started thinking deeper thoughts maybe too, so that might be part of it.
All right, well.
Did we hit almost everything?
Yeah.
Great.
So who's doing the interview here anyway?
We'll be interviewing
you.
You're
the one doing the interview. I sort of joined today because I've been trying to get a guy, but I can never get a hold of him.
Oh, so you were both, this was really for both of you then?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought you came along to support her.
Protect her.
Probably a good thing, because if we'd have done everything we were talking about, she wouldn't have had much of an interview.